Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Pamela Reichman has written for the New York Times, Financial Times, International Herald Tribune, the New York Observer, the New York Sun, and other publications, as well as Fortune.com/CNN Money. Prior to becoming a journalist, she performed strategy work for Merrill Lynch and Goldman Sachs. She's the author of a new book entitled Stiletto Network, which is published by Amicom, a division of the American Management Association. Pamela, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you very much.
So, Pamela, what prompted you to undertake this investigation, which led to actually the book Stiletto Network?
In November 2010, I attended a conference for an article that I was writing for the New York Times, and it was 50 women, 25 of the most high-powered women on the East Coast and 25 of the most high-powered women on the West Coast. And the purpose of the conference was to bring these women together to bridge the coastal divide and to get these women networking and talking about their various businesses. They were from all different industries. And while I was there, I met one woman who introduced me to another and introduced me to another. And in the course of talking and doing interviews, one of them said, well, in my dinner group. And I said, who's in your dinner group? And she said, well, I had one in the late 90s, and it was me and Meg Whitman when she was running eBay, and Joy Covey when she was CFO of Amazon, and Dana Evan when she was CFO of VeriSign. It was a bunch of very high-powered women across different companies, but also across different industries. What was interesting is that they all had technology on the basement level of their business, but they really weren't in the same field. So I said to this woman, you know, how did you all find each other? And she sort of jokingly laughed, and she said, well, when you're the only skirt in the room and another one walks in, you kind of notice. And then, about 2 months later, I was continuing interviews for, I really didn't know what it was going to be, but I felt like I was onto something. And another woman mentioned her dinner group, and she was in a totally different geography. This is a woman from LA. And then another woman from New York said the same thing, and another woman from Philadelphia.
So a pattern emerges on this dinner group thing.
Exactly. I started to discover dinner groups and salons and networking circles, co-working groups in every major city in the U.S. And most of them have no more than 10 women, but in aggregate, they number in the tens, if not thousands, of women nationwide. And a lot of them have funny names, like the Babes in Boyland, or the Chicks in Charge, or Sluts, Successful Ladies Under Tremendous Stress.
You said that. I didn't.
Certainly did. Actually, they all said it first.
Okay.
And, you know, the power bitches and the brazen hussies, too. All of these women were reappropriating names that, you know, historically were sexist, but using them for fun.
What specifically differentiates today's women's groups from the traditional, you know, ladies-only coffee clatch?
In the book, I describe it as the confluence of evolution and revolution, that finally there are enough women in the workforce. Finally, you know, after 40 years of women in the workplace, there are enough women to do really powerful things for each other. And then what's happening is technology is intervening. Women are more active users of social media anyway. They're a natural extension of what women do offline, which is they network, they collaborate. If you look at what women have historically done in every other arena, be it the carpool, the PT, or the Girl Scouts, women reach out more broadly than men. They collaborate. But what makes this different is that now these women have either become captains of industry, or many of them who are doing this are aspiring entrepreneurs. I found the same activity among CEO-level women in their 60s, aspiring millennials, and also moms launching businesses in their basements. They're not only talking about their kids, but they're also talking about their businesses. And what I found is these women are allowing each other to make certain leaps. They're giving each other courage. They're facilitating new job opportunities, intel, information, introductions, and in some cases, really landmark deals.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, talk to me a little bit about this sort of generational crossover. I mean, do you find that there's a cultivation of this next generation? Is it really a new development for women?
It is. And I think historically, if you look within big corporations, or, you know, even inside entire industries, what you found was that going back 20 or 30 years, there was really only room for one token woman. And you could say the same for minority groups. So I think historically, women got a bad rap, but in fact, it was the system that was the problem. I don't think women are necessarily, you know, steamrolling horrible people or catty to each other. What happened was, if there's only room for one token woman, it's going to be you or me, not you and me. You're not going to share information with your girlfriend in the, you know, in the office next door. But what's happened now is that there's more room for women both within individual companies and within whole industries so they can breathe a bit more. And they're not as threatened by the women coming up. You know, it's not like you're going to be knocked off your perch. Right. So what women are realizing within the major companies is that they're stronger together, that when they have a collective voice, than they are apart. At the same moment in history, after, again, 40 years of women in the workforce, what you're finding is there are enough women at the top who have positions of power, but also a lot of self-made wealth, and they're willing to take a risk with it. They're looking at a world, and especially in some of the big companies, the needle hasn't moved as quickly as they'd like. You know, if you're a partner at Goldman Sachs, maybe if you're, you know, one of still few women partners at Goldman Sachs, you're looking around and saying, huh, I thought 10 years ago that the world would look a lot different, and it doesn't. And so how do you start to change the world in ways that you want once you have the power and the money? Well, you find that young female entrepreneur and you spin your platinum Rolodex on her behalf. What I found is a lot of examples of very senior women investing in young women's companies and then not only giving them money, but also giving them access to everyone they know, really slingshotting these young women to visibility. And, you know, 80% of startups fail, so most of these will crash and burn. But if any of these young women hit it big, their investors they're all in it together. They're all rooting for the same team. They're all going to get rich together.
You know, following that same sort of line of thought, a quote from your book, actually, you say, Stiletto Networks are responsible for propelling women not only up the company ladder, but also from firm to firm and industry to industry. Would you mind sharing with us maybe a couple examples?
Certainly. One example that comes to mind is a woman named Malin Yen. She is in her early 40s and she has two young kids, and she was the head of IP, intellectual property law, at Cisco. And she was talking to a potential vendor. Some guys came in to show her an idea for a risk management solution provider, and she thought it was a fantastic idea. She joined this company called RPX, and it just went public at nearly $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, she had a group in Silicon Valley called CHIPS, Chiefs in IP. About 7 years ago, all of these women got together and they realized that they were some of the only women in IP, even in Silicon Valley, where women tend to sort of rise more quickly in their careers. They had no agenda. They just wanted to get to know each other. Now, when Malin made this leap to RPX, all of these women, a lot of them, became her clients. Mm-hmm. And they greased the wheels within their organizations in amazing ways. Now, she obviously worked hard, and they wanted to listen to her because they knew she had good ideas, but also because it was her, because they had this basis of trust. So that was an example where they just wouldn't let her fail. She made a leap. She left her big, phenomenal job at a big corporation to join a startup, mm-hmm. and she credits at least some of her success to the support of these seven women, mm-hmm. these CHIPS. Another example is Kim Moses, who is a TV producer in LA. She works with her husband, Ian Sander, and their company is Sander Moses Productions. Kim and her friend Willow Bay, who's a television correspondent, started their group in LA called The Vault about 3 or 4 years ago, and they brought together women from all different industries, the founders of Juicy Couture, a lawyer who's a co-owner of the LA Sparks, the WNBA team, women from across all different industries. And one of Kim's buddies, whom she met through The Vault, Veronica Kwan Rubinek, runs international distribution at Sony and hired Kim to do international distribution for Clint Eastwood's film Hereafter. Mm-hmm. And that campaign was so successful that she then enlisted Sander Moses to develop an app for Happy Feet 2. That app became the most downloaded app in the history of Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And it all started at these groups. It all starts in these, you know, at dinner tables, mm-hmm. in these women's homes, mm-hmm. or in restaurants. But what's happening is they're really propelling each other forward. They're helping each other get ahead, and in many cases, giving each other the courage to take leaps that they might not have made, mm-hmm. if they didn't have this incredibly supportive network behind them.
Now, you talked a little bit about this earlier, about the sort of inherent abilities of women and networking. Obviously, men have their own way of networking. Can you talk a little bit about maybe these differences in the way men and women network?
Well, what I found was interesting. What I found was that what began as a negative, which is really the fact that women could not find like-minded counterparts. They couldn't find other women, people who talked, acted, smelled, and dressed like them within their own companies, mm-hmm. if not within their own industries. They had to look outside to form friendships. You know, they couldn't find the alliances within companies because it was so competitive. Again, if there's only room for one woman, it's going to be you or me. So the women within the companies couldn't really be friends. So women developed very broad horizontal networks. And what I mean by that is they looked outside of their companies and their industries really to find friends. And we're going back 20 or 30 years here. But as these women sort of continue to rise within their respective companies, what you now find 20, 30, 40 years later is that the top women in finance know the top women in media, who know the top women in tech, who know the top women in retail. They've thrown the net wider. Mm-hmm. And from this new perspective, there are many more women with whom to affiliate. And so the way that women developed these horizontal cross-industry networks was quite different from men. So again, if you are a banker, if you're in corporate finance and you're in the aviation group, maybe you need to know other bankers and some corporate lawyers and people just in your industry. But men weren't historically obliged to look outside of their industry. Mm-hmm. You know, if 20 guys knew they were all going to make partner together, they could afford to be collegial. Mm-hmm. You had your network right there. Mm-hmm. What's happened over time is that the negative has become a positive for women. We are at this moment in history, this is the era where industries are converging. What we're seeing is game-changing innovation taking place at the junction of these industries. Mm-hmm. All of these women have the existing relationships and they're exchanging intel all the time and companies are being formed. They're coming together mm-hmm. to invest in companies and create their own companies because that's where the ideas are and mm-hmm. that's now where the money is.
So how has writing Stiletto Network affected your own life?
Not to be corny, but it's completely changed my life. If I, you know, I never could have anticipated that I would be where I am 3 years ago. It took me a long time to admit to myself that I was writing a book. When I started this process, I had just stopped nursing my third son, and I certainly wasn't looking to embark upon a huge project. But what happened was, is that I found myself living this story as I was writing it. Mm-hmm. When I attended that initial conference, I actually talked to the founders of the conference the summer before, and they put me in touch. As women would agree to sign on to this conference, many of them agreed to be interviewed by me. Mm-hmm. So it really became this organic process. At first, I started out with one thesis, but as I talked to women and had these really open-ended conversations, the conversations went in all different directions. And these women were incredibly open with me. They told me about their families and their fears. And even before I had a commissioned article, much less a thesis or a book contract, they started saying, hey, I think you're onto something. I don't know what it is either, but I'm going to introduce you to my friends. Mm-hmm. And so it became like a starburst. I had five sources initially, but each of them introduced me to five people who introduced me to five people and five mm-hmm. people. And I joke around that it's like the modern manifestation of that old Fabergé shampoo commercial.
Right,
you know,
right,
I
right,
told two friends right, and they told two
right,
friends
exactly.
and so on. And that's how the story grew. And as a result, I have my first book.
Awesome. Okay, so the next question, the loaded next question is, okay, so fine. Do you currently belong to a girl power group or do you plan to start one?
Well, now that I've started this, I don't think I'll ever stop mm-hmm. because, again, I've lived this story as I was writing it. Mm-hmm. I felt personally how powerful these networks are mm-hmm. because what these women have done on each other's behalf, mm-hmm. they've also done for me. They've enabled me to write my first book mm-hmm. and continue to encourage me over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. As a result, I'm kind of part of many of their groups. You know, I've had the joy and challenge of dipping in and out and getting to know so many of them. Mm-hmm. So my hope is that I will keep in touch with all of these groups mm-hmm. and sort of continue to do this. And also that, I mean, I would love to form my own.
Sure.
I just haven't had time
yeah,
because
had
I've
time.
Been spending,
sure.
you know,
I have a question for you. A good deal of the stories we've talked about here have been women who were either at a fairly high level in a company or aspiring to a high level and eventually achieving that one way or another. Do you have any, you know, special words of advice for, you know, younger women, people who might be new managers or middle managers who aspire to this type of success? It isn't only for the C-suite level people. It isn't only for the senior vice presidents and stuff like that. You know, what can you yeah. tell my daughter?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That might help.
As I was writing this, I was building the case for a powerful nationwide trend. And so I was following the money. There is a massive money trail. And a lot of the women I highlight are quite successful now. But many of them attribute that success to their Stiletto networks. They weren't so successful when they started these groups. And so what I would say to younger women or even middle managers is this isn't a story for just successful women. This isn't something that begins in the C-suite. This is something that gets you to the C-suite, if that is in fact what you want. What's interesting is also that what I found is that these women really validate each other's choices. There is no one definition of success. It's what you want. It's not what somebody's telling you is a definition of success. So if you don't want to be a CEO, that's perfectly fine. If you're a mom launching a business in your basement, the idea is get together with one friend and say, huh, these are the skills that I'd love to learn, or this is what my dream is. And that could be starting a school or bettering a community or overhauling a nonprofit. This is not confined to business. These relationships among women, which are based in values and true ethics, go all over. And what they really help women do is become the biggest, boldest, bravest version of themselves mm-hmm. that they can be. This isn't just about achieving in business. This is about achieving your dreams.
Mm. Excellent. We've been speaking to Pamela Reichman. She's the author of a fantastic new book entitled Stiletto Network, published by AMACOM, a division of the American Management Association. Pamela, it's been great to meet you, and thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave.
Join the American Management Association group on LinkedIn to share insights with hundreds of your management peers and to discuss practices in the areas of organizational management and leadership. To find us, simply search for the group American Management Association from your LinkedIn account. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.